What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Whiskey Web and Whatnot with your hosts, Robbie the Wagner and Charles William Carpenter III.
That's right. I'm a proper bloke.
Oh, God. Yes, Chuck likes to start offending people at second one of recording. But we do have a guest today.
That's my normal accent. I do this American accent for the show.
Oh, you're faking it. Yeah. Okay, I see.
That's how I normally talk.
Stage accent.
Yeah, something like that.
Our guest today is Jay Tompkins. What's going on, Jay?
Thank you for having me. Yeah, it's nice to be on board. It's taken a while for us to get this one going.
Yeah, we appreciate you being on. For anyone who hasn't seen your amazing demos and things online, could you give a quick intro into who you are and what you do?
Well, yeah, you've introduced my name. I'm Jay Tompkins. I've been like an engineer, I guess, for like a decade, but most people that might have seen me online will know me for creating all sorts of animations and sort of whatever comes to my head, like the whole line of bringing ideas to life, right? And what I like to do is I like to build whatever idea I have and then kind of share tips and tricks around how I built it with anything that I could use, really, if it's something new coming to the platform or if it's like some particular tool. But then my day-to-day, I'm a senior DX engineer at Vercel.
Nice.
That kind of wraps it up.
Yeah, I'd say that covers it. And what position on the pitch do you play?
I play central defensive midfield.
Oh,
so thanks.
Yeah.
A quick shift to football pronounced soccer, depending on where you are.
Right, where you come from. Yeah. Our one listener knows how much of a football fan I am and that I call it football because you use your feet, not egg ball game.
Yeah. How American football became called football is just another discussion for another day, I think. But I don't understand.
I'm kind of indifferent about it. I don't mind it either way. But it's interesting to me that, I don't know, like it's kind of a weird tangent story, but I meet my wife, she's living in Seattle, and Seattle just happens to be one place where they're really into football.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's kind of interesting how that all came about. So yeah, going to Seattle and being downtown there and they have flags for like the team and stuff is kind of cool.
Yeah, and they have a long history, at least for us in sports, like the NASL team, USL team, coming into the MLS team. So there's a lot of heritage there.
But what team was your favorite? That's what the ones you went to, you've got to tell me now.
All right. Well, first
let's have some whiskey.
Let's do it while we introduce the whiskey. Okay. Yeah. So today we're having Eagle Rare, which is a fairly popular Buffalo Trace distilled 10-year. Yes. Nice bottle.
Rare.
It is Eagle
it right on,
Rare.
Right on the bottom.
I know.
It's rare.
Couldn't be more American, I guess. But all right. So it's 90 proof, aged 10 years. The mash bill is undisclosed, but this is thought to be one of Buffalo Trace's low rye mash bills. So under 10% rye, high corn, all that kind of fun stuff. This was actually one that I used to get. This used to be like my go-to all the time where I was like, oh, I'm getting a nicer bottle. Hang out with friends. It's like $30. It's gone up in price quite a bit, but yeah, still is, I think.
$30 is like solid. The shipping for this bottle.
I know. Seriously. Anymore. Whiskey is crazy. So as we smell and think about this. So the first European match I ever went to in person was actually at the San Siro. It was Inter Milan versus Fiorentina. And was the year that Mourinho was there. A couple of years, but it was in 2009. Amazing. I've been to the Camp Nou. Also, saw Messi play. I think Thierry Henry was there at that point still. And they played the Yellow Submarine. Was it Villarreal or something like that? And then I've been to Old Trafford twice now because my team is Manchester United since the 90s, actually. And so that's
you've
my
heard some good
secret.
Ones. Yeah. I imagine the San Siro to be incredible.
It really was. It was nuts. People were nuts, though, too. Like, the away fans, they have that that like big plexiglass separating
the
away fans.
To, like, hold them back.
Yeah, and they still try to, like, climb around and do crazy stuff, too.
Oh.
So it's like, all right. I get a little sniff of caramel.
Yeah, it's like a spicy, buttery caramel, like a holiday candy.
I was going to say, I did that straight from the bottle, and that's what I took from it.
Yeah, butterscotch, yeah.
Butterscotch, yeah. Mmm, yeah. Oh, yeah, tons of butterscotch up front. A little bit of nutmeg on the finish. Nice burn. I call it the hug, Kentucky hug, when it burns your throat a little bit. Because I'm from Kentucky originally, so don't hold that against me, though. I don't have that funny accent or nothing. See, I'm bad at many accents.
I was going to say, do you just bring that out at different occasions?
No, not really. It's funny. My wife was very disappointed a couple of years into our relationship. She admitted to me that she was always she was glad that I didn't speak like that all the time, but also kind of hoped that with a couple of drinks in me, I might slip into it a little bit or something. And it never happened, unless it was on purpose, of course. But I was like, sorry.
Well, did a lot of people where you grew up have accents? Or, like, I feel like
I was in northern Kentucky, yeah. So right across the river from Cincinnati. Most of the times it was just easier to tell people I was from Cincinnati because it's kind of the area. It's almost like a suburb of, but it's all very urban. And so, no one speaks like that. You go down to, like, Lexington, and then they have that accent.
I don't have that problem. It's just monotone, just straight through. In fact, I had, like, the weird thing that, I don't know if it's because, like, well, my wife now is American, but the conferences I went to last year, when people would meet me, they'd be like, oh, we thought you were from America. We thought you were American.
Really? no. I mean, you got kind of a posh accent, if you ask me, so.
Yeah. You've just offended him.
I know. See, I kept nudging. I knew I'd get there eventually.
Yeah. Matt Pocock told us that British people don't like posh accents. I think you sound too,
I like British accents. Yeah. I do tend to think that, like, I just trust them more. I don't know what it is. It's like with Scouse accents notwithstanding, most British accents make me feel like I trust, I don't know, whatever. Even my, like, directions through whatever, Siri or whatever, I change it over ways. I change ways over to use a British accent. I just am like, yeah, you know where you're going. Just let me know.
That's fair.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, does my accent give off trust? Probably not.
Yeah. No.
I don't think I've ever changed the accent on Waze. And now I want to.
Oh, they have some fun voices. Yeah.
There's some fun ones on there. They did, like, C-3PO for a little while. I was on there. Wasn't, like, Samuel Jackson or something on there? There's some weird ones too, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a look.
Yeah, it's good fun. And then after a while it gets old, you go back to the British lady telling me where I should go.
So I always find it funny that you... Well, just random things to talk about Waze, but yeah, when they did you could use, like, things from Halo, like the video game, mm-hmm. as, like, yeah. your car. It's just kind of cool. But it's just, like, just little touches like that I really appreciate.
Yeah, in, like, trying UI to, like, stuff. Gamify it a little or something. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Driving is boring. Do this.
I only realized how heavily influenced I am by, like, video games and random things that are, like, on TV and stuff in the last conference talk I gave. I think I made a point of saying, like, hey, it was only when I did this deck, like, I realized how much influence I get from, like, old Arnold Schwarzenegger films or, like, Transformers. Oh, yeah. Or
yes, yes.
See, and it just filters into my like creations. It's like, oh, okay. Now it makes
that's
sense.
Interesting. So are you Gen X?
I don't even know what brackets they fall into.
I think Gen X is basically, so I was born in 77, and I think Gen X is somewhere around, like, 82 or, I don't know, so early 80s, yeah. Pretty early 80s.
A little bit later than that. A little bit
okay, than that. All right, that's fair.
Basically, my earliest, like, so I brought this one up, on this tangent now, but I brought this one up because there was a demo I did at the last conference at CSS Day, and basically, like, a fond childhood memory of mine is, and I don't know why my grandparents had it, but they had, like, a VHS tape of the original Transformers movie.
Mm.
My childhood memory is just watching that on repeat, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Ultra
like,
Magnus.
It's one of the, like, yeah, it's just a really fond film for me. So like, even though it's before I was around, I don't know. I just love that. Just love those cartoons. So
I may or may not have seen that in the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. Didn't it have Orson Welles as like the
Unicron? Unicron, exactly. So we, though, should, before going off the rails too much, we do a rating system for the whiskeys that we try. It's very specific and scientific. It is from 0 to 8 tentacles, 0 being horrible, basically spit this out and throw it down the toilet, 4 middle of the road, good stuff, not terrible, not amazing, 8 obviously being like, if I'm going to have alcohol, it will always be this. I mean, that might be excessive, but... I like to keep pushing the boundaries on that. And so, Robbie, do you think you're ready to give it a rating?
It's hard to say since we don't know the exact mash bill, but I like it. I think in the category of normal bourbons, it's a little better than some I've had. So I'm going to give it a 5.5, I think.
That's fair. Jay, do you have any thoughts or feelings about this?
So it's kind of hard for me to base it or compare it to anything.
you could compare it to just like any whiskey you've ever had or just spirits in general.
Yeah. I was along the same lines actually. I was going to say probably around, I was going to go 6. That was going to be my number because I like it. I think it's really nice, but I maybe a little less on the burn and I'd be like just right.
Yeah.
So I do like it. I like the taste of it. It's nice.
I think if you let it hang out in those ice cubes for a few more minutes.
Yeah, that's why like it's working its way in. It's getting nicer with each one. So
yeah, and so I was saying, I think off air, that this was one of my go-tos back in the day when I started getting into nicer whiskeys. Availability, it was like an easy one to pick up. Most folks would like it, sort of like an elevated Maker's Mark kind of thing. This isn't weeded though like that. So for regular bourbons, even though it's harder to get now, I don't think the price is crazy. Typically, it's usually between $60 and $80. It's still age stated 10 years. Love that. So it's like a nicer Buffalo Trace. I might give it a 7 for me. I think this is like still hits for me.
I do like it. I have to say it is nice.
Yeah.
I'm tearing up because it's like, it's melted a little. It's kind of like, it's working its magic.
I'm glad we were able to pick one that you like. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes we pick ones that we've never tried and that neither of us have ever tried. And it doesn't work out, you know. And it's like, luckily we're sending this to you and you're not like, we're not like, hey, go buy this whiskey and it sucks. You know, would you take that risk?
Well, I could have mixed it or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's heavy on the Pepsi.
Right. We didn't say, I don't know if they even have it there, but there's like a peanut butter whiskey that is disgusting.
Yes. So I have seen this and I questioned this because I was like, I feel like we might have seen it in Costco or something like that.
That would make sense.
And I was like, what is that about? Like,
wait, you have Costco?
Yeah. I've got one like 20
minutes. I can move there. Perfect.
This Costco's the best.
Mm-hmm.
So is the tentacle system based on what's behind you?
It is, yes. So
I see there's like a tentacle creature peering out behind you.
Yeah. So for the podcast, it's part of the logo for the podcast. And then it's also for our agency.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's a mythical creature. Yeah, you know, octopi are fun. Not related to whiskey, really, but still.
Well, that was why I questioned the tentacle rating system and then being like, well, it's got to be to do with the logo behind you.
Exactly.
This one is something different.
Well, that's the best way. I mean, I in no shape or form look like a bear, but, you know, well, I don't think I do.
I don't know. That's up for debate.
Yeah, we will. Let's just go out of order here because I did have a question for later about what's up with the bear. So, like, where did that start? And
yeah, it's kind of a weird one. Like socials and stuff, I hadn't really got into at that point. And when I used to like dabble in, it's a long story. So my back end is like logic and middleware engineering. I didn't start with any sort of visual skills, shall we say. And then I kind of moved gradually as time's gone on. I picked up like animation skills and design skills and things. And at the point in time, I was starting my own limited and I didn't have much money and I needed a logo. So I've decided now's the time to learn how to create SVGs and go down like the Inkscape hole and learn how to do all this stuff. And I pretty much always, well, I'm pretty much renowned for wearing hats. Eric Rasmussen always comments that I always have this hat on with the red thing. And he made a comment when we met in Miami earlier this year. He's like, oh, he looked just like it. He had the hat on. And I have a load of them behind me, the red ones up there. But do you know what? I'll just put the red one on.
So, yeah, I was going to say, I didn't recognize you without the red one.
There we go. Now we're on.
Oh,
brand.
There we are. Yes.
Sweat out. Until I just go out of the shower. So there's the red one that I would normally wear. I had made an avatar that was a cat, like with some shades on, like some Ray-Bans and a snapback. And I just made it as like a random thing. I was like, yeah, that'd be cool as an avatar because I didn't really want a photo of my face. I don't know where the love for bears came from, but I've always kind of had them. Had it, and then I was like, this cat sucks. So I kind of like went down this route of, I'm going to learn how to draw these bears. And then for a while, because I don't like having my face anywhere, I just used the bear as an avatar. And then I started posting more online when like the pandemic hit. Like that January was when I started like posting demos and things and like, oh, let's give this X thing a go. And then people were like, do you have a face? Because I just used my avatar for so long. And then it was like, oh, all right, I'll actually like bring out my face. So the bear just kind of evolved. And then because I had learned logo design as more of a necessity because I didn't want to pay a designer for it, I revisited it earlier, like, well, pretty a year or so ago now, and I was like, it was kind of like one of those nice skills to pick up because I was like, the original was terrible. Like I couldn't use it in other places. It wouldn't work on like I had t-shirts and hoodies done, people like bought them, but it doesn't work, you know, I learned stuff about like, you know, how to design, because that can't just be like dropped on anything, whereas that you can make it one tone and you can just drop it anywhere, right? Like it'll work on any background. You can change that to all red and it's still going to work. Whereas when you start going with like all these colors. So I learned a lot of things, and that's kind of one thing that I'm kind of driven by. I love like learning different stuff. So I'll just be like, oh, this was sweet. Like I learned all about SVG, and then I was inspired by things I saw on CodePen, and I was like, all right, I'm going to learn how to animate, and it snowballs, and then you're like, right, now I want to learn about FreeJS, and now I want to learn about this framework and that framework. And yeah, it's funny, like people, I don't know, it's the people that kind of know me or have worked with me know that I cover a lot of different things. But then if you only seen me from an online perspective, you'd think that, oh, he just makes CSS demos all day long. But it's really not my background at all.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
My hobby. Well, yeah, it was always amazing. Like, so you know, doing React from like V01.
And so you know all about the taint?
God. I've seen this. But I went through all that stage, you know, when that was the teething problems. I did AngularJS, yeah. I did Backbone.
Like, yep. I feel your pain.
Periods. And yeah. Like that's kind of like where my real like curiosity and like the, I don't like saying passion because it just feels like cliche, but that's where I enjoy being, like stuck in a node file or like some like cranking logic and things.
Oh yeah.
The animation stuff is like all just, it's just fun. Like it's fun stuff to make.
It's also a lot sexier than like, look at this function that, yes. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
Sorts. And this is what I always tell people. I'm like, look, I could post that like I've just refactored this into some sweet server component, but like no one's going to care.
Yeah. Look at the big O notation.
Wait a minute.
The time is so much better.
You're are you contractually obligated to like App Directory and RSC?
I am not. We're advised to, think freely.
No, nice. Very nice.
And excellent. Give all our feedback and stuff. Like, yeah, it's, to be fair, like, I couldn't be happier where I am at the moment, but I actually really like the idea of App Directory. Obviously, everything has its pluses and pros and cons, but I just like the idea of, like, it feels like with React, we kind of went through this, like, oh, this is a good idea. Yeah, everyone likes this. And then, like, let's just put everything in the client. And now we're going to this point where it's like, actually, let's just skim out the DX part, because that's the bit that people like, and let's try and make it as light as possible on the client. And it's like, ah, we're finally going the right way. That's how I feel about it. Like, it feels like the way it's kind of shifting, like when we do like server actions and things, kind of feels more better for the end user. Some of the speed of some of these apps that use it is just like blows my mind. Like, I've opened it on a new tab and it's loaded before I even got there, and it's like, wow, that's really good. Like, and I'm not expecting it. Like, and I feel like, yeah, there's a lot of opinions out there about this stuff, but I think even as like users, we're still discovering things about it. Like, I think it kind of makes us think of it differently. And that's how I approach most things. Like, I think, you know, just be open-minded about it and just see where it takes you. You just never
know. Yeah, there's a phrase, you know, there's a lot of different ways to skin a cat. I don't know why that's a good phrase or even a commonly known phrase, yeah, but like, don't skin cats, no matter which way, you know, you choose. Yeah. But like, obviously it just means, multiple paths to the same solution. I think we are like facing another time of that where like there's a lot of different really smart ways to do things, and it's kind of like choose your favorite adventure to get there, which is pretty exciting to me, which is why I used to threaten that I was just going to be a YAML developer. Now I think I'm just going to like, do PHP. Like Rails or something.
Well, that's what I kind of love about, I love how Astro kind of changed some perspectives when that dropped, because it was the whole like, you can write whatever you want. You just do a React component, and then over there you could do some Vue, and you can just drop it all in the same thing. And I think like that's just a magical developer experience. It's like, oh sweet, like I can just dip in and use the bits I want here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think like that's really special, and I think that kind of starts making other people think like, oh, actually, like maybe I can do things a bit differently. Maybe I don't need to ship all this stuff.
Exactly. Is, you know.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, everyone's just trying to ship something good for their end user, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they noticed, you know, that everyone loved frameworks and these huge JavaScript things, but like we didn't actually need half of it. Like the whole, like, you know, if you have 100 items and you want to like render them in a loop, right? But you actually don't care about that happening. It should just like be spit out as a static HTML file with 100 things in it. Like, that's probably the thing you really want instead of that happening in real time.
Like, this reminds me of like early on in framework days, AngularJS mode. I was doing a contract, like this is quite a few years ago now, obviously AngularJS, but there was always that issue with AngularJS of like, you can't render loads of things in a list. That's why you just reminded me of it. When you got to like big numbers, you had to put in these weird hacks. So you'd be writing like was it directives? I can't remember what they called it, like the controller sort of thing you would do. But you'd end up writing something, and then what you'd end up doing is taking the data and actually using something like handlebars or a templating lib to render the HTML for you, because you wouldn't want it to be controlled by Angular, because it would just slow the whole thing down. And it was like, wow. Those sorts of things should have been alarm bells then, but then React dropped in and was like, whoa, this is going to be different now. It's like, it is, obviously, it's much, much different. It's a much more mature ecosystem, but it's kind of
even at that time, it was, you know, I can recall coming from a Backbone Marionette app and then being able to do all these things. It's funny because I remember we just created like essentially like identity components, and we dropped them into Django, right? Post load. And then, boom, you do some magic stuff, and then they can log in and get some personalization and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, oh, wow, I can do this in isolation on a just regular server, you know, returned page. That was mind-blowing. And then we went really far that direction. And now I think we're starting to ask the questions of what's a good balance there, or, you know, when do we need all of that? When do we need less of that? When do we need none of that? I think you bring up a good point. Astro really started to make us, from a developer perspective. Sorry, I can't talk today.
No, that's same.
Maybe I should do it in a British accent, and then you'll both trust me. And okay, so what region does my accent speak to?
Oh,
it's just bullshit TV. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Right? Like that?
I'm terrible with regions and things. So.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm just monotone, just down south. Near
down South. That's kind of international. I blend in with everywhere.
Yeah.
Use your American Express here. You know, it's like a commercial voice or something. Anyway, I don't know. Can I identify?
We both said perspective on the bingo card, but we haven't reached for specificity yet. So we're okay.
Yeah. That's a tough one. That's a tough one normally for me.
That's tough when you're like presenting something like, I don't know, like CSS cascade layers, and you've got to say it about six times, and you're like, how did I get through that?
And I don't use that word at any point in my life otherwise. That's weird.
Yeah.
Right. But no, I think it's interesting to hear someone else doing Backbone Marionette as well. I still have an app like living on GitHub pages that's Backbone Marionette. Still works. Still works fine.
Well, that app we built over a year or so when I worked for National Geographic, and it went out in beta and then got crushed. So it's dead. Womp womp.
That was an interesting little like framework tool though. It was like one of the first ones that kind of made you think a bit differently about what you were doing. But the only bit that I remember is not the only bit I remember, but one of the bits that always sticks out is how you would do like the event handling in strings, right? So you'd be like, what was it? Was it like button? Like it'd be like button at click or something like that, and then you would map it to the function or something, and it'd be like, this is weird. But then, you know, people do it straight in the attribute in other things. So it's like, it's kind of cool.
If you think that was weird, though, what about this whole, like, when Redux first kind of started going, and then there were all these, like, packages around Redux, and you had Thunk and Sagas and stuff like that, and it would do like, action here, but then the state's over there, which gets triggered to run through, and...
That whole period was amazing. Like, I remember my first I didn't really hop online or anything like that around that time when like Redux was dropping, and I remember I was doing a contract at the time, and it was like that was coming out. Someone had gone and done a bit of research and had a look at it, and they like sat down to like pair up with me, and they were like, yeah, I'll just walk you through how this Redux works. And I remember the first time someone showing me that, and I was just like, what? What is this? Like this is wild. And now you think about it and you think, it makes perfect sense. You know, you just dispatch the action.
Yeah, it never made sense to me.
Everyone just subscribes to the actions and it all makes nice sense. It's funny, like one of the biggest, not the biggest trauma, but when anyone brings up Redux, the thing I remember is when everyone thought, hey, Hooks is out, you've got to use context.
Right.
Let's just build our own Redux. And everyone seemed to like go on this rite of passage where they just, we're going to do it. We don't need Redux anymore. And everyone just did a use context thing. And everyone just ended up rewriting Redux.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. We did it. We like wrote, we tried using context for a conference app. It was good. Like it worked. But then we realized, like in Redux, I would have just done this. Right. Well, I'll just write that functionality in. Oh no, now I need that. And you ended up just like basically building your own.
Yeah.
Like,
but people enjoy that. So everyone does it. They like building shit for like the sake of building it. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. Yeah. Those kind of things are good. They are good for learning. Like, you learn a hell of a lot about like how things work from doing that. Like one of the things I always say to people is just have a go at building things from scratch. Like it doesn't matter. And then reach for stuff later on if you want. Because you never know. That's kind of why I build things that you can't just happy path. Because it's like, you're going to find out an awful lot by just trying to build something that you haven't seen before or you don't know how to build. You just go on a tangent of like, well, and break it up into little bits. and then be like, right, well, that kind of worked. And in the end, you kind of mishmash it all together and you learn a load of little tricks and then you'll take them somewhere else. And yeah, it just kind of goes like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like a cascade.
Yeah.
During that crazy Redux time, I got to have a break for a little while and I went and learned Ember.js. And that's actually how Robbie and I met. And I was like, wow, they've made all these decisions for me. Just do what they say and it works. No shit. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Ember Data was like, oh my gosh, such a smart, fun state management store.
Except when it's not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until you want to go off the rails.
If you're doing it all JSON API spec, then yeah, it's like, let me just hit save and it like, does my post to save all my data or whatever behind the scenes. But like, yeah, if you're like, oh, I'm going to follow whatever format I want, it's like, no, I didn't work.
Yeah. Well, in the REST API Wild Wild West, it gets harder for sure.
Fortunately, that's one that I've just not, it's one of the ones that I didn't get, haven't like been able to spend much time with. I've only briefly played with Vue since React landed. It's always just been React or like Next. I've played in Astro quite a bit, but they're the ones that I never got to like have a proper play with. Like Vue is a good one that I like it, but just never, those opportunities never came up. And Ember's one that I dabbled with, and then it was like I never got to use it like commercially. So it's like because I've heard it's like very good when you use it on like real stuff.
Depends on your definition of good. It's the DX. The DX is unbeatable in my opinion. The performance, it doesn't have like server side rendering. It does, but like it's an afterthought. It's like, so you know, there's give and take. If it's for like an internal JavaScript heavy dashboard, I think it's the best thing you could use. But if it's for like a marketing site, don't touch that. Like,
it's way too opinionated. And Astro is your tool for that anyway, right? For a marketing site, it's like crazy town to reach for a framework, really, in general. What about Svelte? Yeah. I would think you might have some Svelte.
Yeah, I've had a little play with it. Again, it's not one that I've really pushed much to production with, but I have played with it a fair bit. There's a good community around that. People really like it. Especially at the moment, everything, there's a lot of hype on App Directory and like that kind of thing. It's like a hot topic.
I mean, yeah, I think next, well, obviously there's the conference tomorrow, right? Tomorrow?
Yep, tomorrow.
And well, when you hear this, it will have been weeks ago, but yes.
Yeah, well, yeah. Tomorrow, October 26th for conference.
Remember the conf?
For recording. Yeah, exactly. Remember that thing?
Yeah, that thing Guillermo said was insane.
Yeah, I can't believe he announced that he's giving away all his shares to Jay. Yeah. It's the new CEO. Let's see where you take it. Anyway, I'm here for the jokes. I don't know. There are a couple of these hot takes that I do want to ask him. So I don't know if you want to.
Yeah.
Regress back to those. I like hot takes.
I don't know which of them are actually hot anymore, but just jump in wherever you feel like.
Okay. So your CSS experiments, how much harder or easier would they be using Tailwind?
They're not too bad. I was hoping this topic would come up actually, because I actually really like Tailwind. So I think it's one of them, again, people just love a little poke something in the fire, you know, that'll get some hot takes, some spicy action online. But
exactly.
And I disagree with the negative takes on both sides, if that makes sense. Like, I think everyone should just be happy that it exists for reasons. Like I use it on my site. The thing with Tailwind is, I don't know, people just get hooked on it thinking it's like some kind of weird bootstrap where people don't know what CSS is or something. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it is still CSS. And everything you can do in CSS, you can do in Tailwind. You just configure it to do it and it works. I think people get blinded by the syntax and don't appreciate the real value it brings. And the value it brings is tackling the hardest piece of CSS, which is making it performant and structuring it and not repeating it and like creating bloated files because you've written display grid 84 times across your repo. That's the issue. One thing I always say like to people, if they're starting out and they're not sure of these things and they want to understand a bit more, try building a site from scratch with nothing, like no tools, just HTML, CSS, JS, maybe a bundler, right? Like V or something, I don't know. When you get to the page speed insights part of your project, depending on how many pages you've got, you'll get hit with, hey, your CSS could be quicker. And you'll be like, damn, what do I need to do now? You might end up going down this route where you're like, right, well, now I need to think about which styles are critical, which ones are above the fold, right? So, right, how am I going to do that? And then you go down this route that I've done this, like, because I'm a nerd and I like, you know, in a good sense, like, I love these kind of problems. So, yeah, my wife got that surprise. We had one over the holidays. I'm like, she'd be thinking I'm doing the animation. I'm going to make this image optimization great. And I'm going to make my styles really good so I get better page speed insight scores. And I'll spend a week doing it if I have to. You know? But I'll happily sit in a Node script and be like, I'm going to work out which styles I need at runtime. And then I'm going to extract them into a critical file. And I'm going to inline them in the head. And then I'm going to load all the below styles at the end of the body. And I'm going to get my page speed insight scores right down. But that stuff takes time. And you need to kind of understand what you're doing. And that's where Tailwind comes in. It just says, do you know what? I'll work all that out for you. You just build your components. And you just drop your little styles in here. And you can configure some if you want and add them in. But I'll worry about making the file as small as possible and loading it for you in somewhere. And you don't worry about it because you'll only load a little minimal piece of like styles and that'll be it. And you can put all the new experimental stuff in Tailwind. The last article I wrote for Smashing was about the new linear function in CSS. So there's a new function where you can essentially draw like paths to create easing functions. So you can do like bounce or like elastic easing just with like function. But what I did was I added them all to a Tailwind config and did like a Tailwind play at the end of the article. So you could go and use them in Tailwind and it'd just be like, you just write ease bounce out or bounce in and it would work fine. And it's like, I kind of love using it because it makes a lot of sense in components because you're just going to write once. And the only thing that I would like and the tool that I started building was almost like a linter, but like an analyzer that would look across your repo and say, how many times have I used a specific Tailwind class name? Because like, I feel like sometimes, you know, if there's one instance where you've accidentally written MB4, or something, and everywhere else you're using MB6, and you'd be like, oh, I forgot about that one, and like I want to know where it is. Like that's the only thing that sometimes I'm a bit like, did I accidentally leave a flex somewhere? You know, like that's the only thing I'm sometimes unsure of. It hasn't caught me out yet, but sometimes I'm thinking like, but that's where like visual regression testing or things like that would come into play anyway on something big, but. Yeah, I'm always like, oh, I wonder if I left a little sneaky text white somewhere.
Yeah. I think one of the big benefits that people don't think about often is like, we've probably all worked in enterprise size apps that have like, you know, those big CSS files where people are like, no, don't touch that one because like that's maybe used. We're not sure. Just don't touch it. And you just ship, you know, a megabyte of extra CSS for no reason. And if you're using Tailwind utility classes, when you delete your HTML that you're not using anymore, it goes away. Like
it just does all that tidy up for you.
Yeah.
Anything at scale, like I really recommend it because it's just going to take that decision-making process out of the way for you. Like it's an added stress that you don't need. Like, especially if you're trying to ship something quick, like I just want to ship the thing, get out the door. I don't want to be thinking, oh, damn, the performance is bad. Like, I just want to worry about something, making something that looks good, gives a direct call to action or whatever, gives whatever my user needs. If I need some scripts thrown in there to do some client-side stuff, that's great. And then the styling part is like my last little sprinkle of sugar. But I don't want to be worrying about like, well, I don't want to add too many styles because it's gonna hamper performance. So
yeah. That's
like how you always kind of approach it in the, you know, HTML, then the JS, then like you're building a house, right?
Yeah. And you got to trust the machines. I mean, right? Give them good instructions. You get a good output. Like, I don't know. I tend to listen. In the future, I want my robot overlords to know that I respected them, you know, and let me live. That's it.
So they treat you well.
Yeah, they treat me well.
You kept your Roomba clean.
Exactly. Yes. I've kept it clean. I've done the maintenance. I take it apart, give it a new battery, everything. So it won't kill me.
Do you have how do you find your Roomba? Any good?
Yeah, I like it. Maybe this is a little like sexist or something, but I bought it for my wife as a gift.
That's like buying the Peloton for the wife, like that big controversy.
I only bought it because she asked for it. I was like, hey, they sent me something like with a sale or something. And she already had a spin bike. She's very into that. Used to be a spin instructor, actually. But I was like, hey, this came up. You want that? Yes. Okay. Done. I didn't suggest it. I just. Yeah,
but the optics don't. No one cares what the intention was. They still have to just blow it up. No. But anyway,
I don't share personal details.
The Roombas.
Spin bike's cool, though.
We now have three Roombas because we have one per floor.
An army of Roombas.
Yeah. There's more Roombas than yous. Sorry.
Yep.
Is it going to be like that? Now, this is an old film. Is it batteries not included?
Yes. Short circuit. All the Roombas. Batteries not included. Yeah.
All the Roombas are going to turn into little spaceships.
Yeah.
That's my product idea. Roombas should be drones so that you only need one and it could fly to your next floor and vacuum it.
Or you could set up your own service where you have like a fleet of them and they just go and clean other people's houses.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, there you go. They could fly and come in through some like little doggy door like thing. Yeah. The Roomba service is here. There are drone mowers that are like fairly industrial strength, so I feel like it could be a similar thing.
Well, we have like the and I know they have them in some places in the States, but like the little six wheel robots with the flags and lights, and they deliver your groceries.
I've seen these
out on the streets, like just
I've seen these in a couple of like college areas where they do like delivery. Through those little robots on campus. Yeah.
So my wife loves it whenever we drive past and like, oh, look, robots.
Right. Robots. One day they turn around and shoot you or something. I don't know.
They're kind of cool. Like they just wait. They wait at the traffic lights. You know, they take the time. And they,
Ooh. So I'm in Phoenix. There are cars like that here.
You're Nemo in Phoenix?
Is here? I'm in Phoenix. So there are cars here that are driving by themselves, and I can actually do like a Uber with a driverless car.
Oh, wow.
If I want. I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to do it soon.
So my in-laws are in Arizona.
What?
Yeah, that's where my wife is at the moment. Mesa.
She's here?
Yeah.
In Mesa?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's the same hood. I mean, it's basically like, you know, whatever, suburb of Phoenix.
Yeah.
It's like 20 minutes from my house.
That's wild.
That is wild. That's crazy.
We were there at Christmas. We did. We went mountain biking. In the hills.
Hit me up next time you're here.
Yeah, that's cool. Small world.
It is. Yeah, it is really funny.
I might be there soon. So.
All right. Well, I will be here for a while because it gets colder everywhere else and it gets nicer here. So I just stay. Turns out.
Yeah, that was not. We were there at Christmas and it was really nice.
I mean, this is the place for Christmas for sure. So
yeah.
By the time this is released, you will have hung out probably.
Yeah, maybe. That's cool. Where are you, Robbie?
I am in Great Falls, Virginia. So it's like about an hour from DC.
What's your address?
No, I need to know yours off the top of my head so I can just list it off. But
that'd be pretty funny. So thanks for letting me know. I'm never going to make sure you memorize my address. Just the office address or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I do want to...
Virginia was the first time I ever went to the States was Virginia.
Oh, really? Where
I went to Herndon.
Oh, Herndon. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty close to me. So
I can remember that as a metro stop.
To this day, it's my favorite like barbecue place I've ever been to, called Red Hot and Blue, and it was
I've heard of it. I have not had it.
It's very good.
we can do a barbecue tour. You come here. There's a place called Little Miss Barbecue that has the best brisket I've had outside of Texas.
Yeah, you see, I haven't been to like where places are renowned for barbecue. Yeah.
Well, I think Texas is overrated.
Ooh, spicy. Yeah. We're still in the hot takes.
So we went we went to I think it was like it's Pine something, like Pine Inn or I don't know. It's like a famous barbecue joint in Texas, and there's like an hour long line. So you're like thinking it's gonna be amazing. And I got it and I was like, it's food. Like, it was not great. So
what did you get and what are they known for? Because it does matter.
Well, I had some of everything. I had some brisket, some pulled pork, sides, whatever. Like, no,
you
want to
lean in where they're known. Yeah, I mean, obviously, there's like they're going to make a bunch of stuff and they run out of things or whatever. But like Texas brisket is definitely kind of the thing. I think in like, you know, you go to like North Carolina or whatever, you want more like pulled pork
and then vinegar
style different sauces and stuff. Yeah. Not just the sauce, though, you know. Anyway, that could be that we should do a second episode all on barbecue because I can definitely talk about this. I just love food in general, which, by the way, I want to say, I remember before I went to Europe, everybody's like, oh, the food in Britain sucks. The food in the UK sucks. Not at all my experience. I don't know. Bubble and Squeak, delicious. Bangers and Mash, delicious. The Indian food there, now I've not been to India, so I can't compare that. But for me, it was the best Indian food I've ever
had. It's good.
It's really spent a lot of time in Leeds, and I went to some places there that were just like insane. So anyway.
Leeds was where I, so Leeds is where I gave my first conference talk and also where I met my wife. So,
wow.
Nice. Randomly.
Very nice.
We ate a really good restaurant there called the Oxo Club. Really good. But yeah, the food here is good. But it was funny because I was about to say something which might make you laugh. But when you said about places running out, the sad thing is here that we don't really have many Taco Bells, like just not a thing. There is a Taco Bell about a 25-minute drive from me that regularly closes early because it runs out of food on a Saturday.
As it should.
And that's how they stay in business.
I love Taco Bell, man.
I was going to say, this is you are hitting a note with Robbie. We have this debate because, I mean, obviously Mexico is amazing food, but like Mexican food in Arizona just like hits right for me, and it's hard for me to go and to this place that doesn't make Mexican food. It makes something else that kind of resembles it.
They don't claim, I don't think it says anywhere Mexican food. I need to check that, but I don't think it, like, they make you think that it's kind of implied, but it's not.
Yeah,
and as long as you get that, it's fine.
If you get a crunchy beef taco supreme, like, that hits. I'm like, this is Taco Bell for me. Everything else, I don't
Mexican
know.
Mexican pizza, man. There. That's the best thing.
It's just a tostada. I don't know.
My first, that first time when I was in the States, when I was in Herndon, like I had a car for the week, and every night I was like, what franchise am I hitting? Just so right. I was like, Taco Bell, Wendy's, all the ones that you don't get here at the time. Yeah. So it's like, I got to try them.
Yeah.
And Taco Bell was a good one. But yeah, Mexican food outside of, if you're including Taco Bell, is really good over there. Like, and it's one of the things that my wife complains about a lot here is that Mexican food is not good here.
Like, right.
Well, especially where we are here, like it's just not very good.
You got to learn to make it, really.
Yeah. Now I've seen it on the other side. I'm like, oh man, it's so good
you
over
get
there.
It.
Like,
even have you been to In-N-Out?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like a tradition. When we get into Arizona.
Yeah. Okay. So, just checking.
I like the Jack in the Box as well.
Yeah.
I like the shake.
And you said you don't drink that much, so are you sure?
What, Jack in the Box?
Jack in the Box is like drunk food for sure. A sourdough Jack is interesting. I don't know. You come here, hit me up, we'll do a little food tour.
Yeah, there was a place where we went for Mexican when we were in Arizona last, and it was really good. I can't remember what it was called. It's like quite an old restaurant.
Probably Teepee or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I have to
ask. Or there's Macayo's. There's
it was
there's
good.
No shortage of options.
Yeah, there are a lot of options that are good. You know, there's like good and then great.
Which are all good compared to
here. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
In fact, I just take you to the Mexican grocery store and just have a field day. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's one
you can get food there.
Like, when you're here, it's like even just getting simple things like, you know, like queso cheese and stuff. It's just like not, it's just not the same. Like just never right. the same. It's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Part of that, if you're comparing it to American stuff, is because in America, we can use a lot of chemicals and stuff that are like not allowed in Europe.
We artificially extra flavor.
Yeah,
that's true. But then again, like I've been to some incredible chippies in England and in Ireland. They were just like, it's so simple. It's in a bag with just the right amount of salt and malt vinegar on every single one. So, you know, straight off.
Yeah, it's hilarious when you look up a fish and chip place in like, say, Arizona or something. And it's like, you look at the images and you're like, what is this?
Exactly. We do have a place here called the Cornish Pasty that has like elevated the pasty. Like it's not just like a grab and go kind of thing. And they have you been?
The pasty is a big thing like in the south here. So like in like Devon, Cornwall, like it's a big thing. And yeah, they are good. And yeah, you have the Cornish Pasty Co, right? It might be the one that's over there. Yeah. So that's like a good. Yeah.
And she has like four or five locations now. It's like crazy.
It's good. It's really good. It's just very different. It's like I don't even know what to compare it to. Would you say
them fancy hot pockets. You know, hot pocket.
Well, it's almost like a what's the pizza equivalent?
A calzone.
Yeah, it's like a
empanada. A lot of cultures actually have a version of this. Yeah.
Everybody made like a flat one and then went, could we fold it over?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's portable. Fold it over.
Yeah, someone just made a pizza with meat and vegetables and gravy and just went, nah, we'll just calzone it.
That's it.
Blast that in the oven for a bit. That's good.
What can I stick in my pocket? Not a pizza.
Yeah.
Again, that's why they call it a hot pocket.
That and sausage rolls, another good one. We have one here called the Clanger.
I don't think I know that.
Ever having one. But yeah, there's some weird kind of pastry things you can get over here.
I want to ask one more hot take before we move completely past that. Is CSS a programming language?
I mean, if we go from the technical, it's a style sheet.
But you're telling the computer how to style items.
Yeah, I guess.
Right?
You're giving instructions.
It does trig stuff now.
Yeah, there's trig. There's also, now, I can't remember what you grouped these as because I was messing around with a silly demo to make a triangle. Are they called exponential functions when you do like math.pal, math.square root?
That sounds right.
So they're in there now as well.
Okay.
So you do like calc with a pal and a square root, which is kind of interesting. If you want to start doing like calculations and things, you can start doing like proper Pythagoras and stuff like that in there.
There we go. I think the answer is yes.
Yeah.
I think once you approach math calculations to that
HTML is not
complex.
That.
No,
I think
it's
getting to the point where there's a lot more like capabilities. So there's a lot of things you can do which replace the script alternative, which kind of make you think a bit differently. But because I spoke about it so often over the last year, it feels like I've been shilling CSS has for like the last 18 months or something, you know. But when it does finally land cross-browser, it's like it's still regarded or, you know, touted to be an absolute game changer across the board, which it will be because it has so many cool applications. But at the same time, it's like I still feel like there's loads of capabilities that people haven't even thought of or uncovered yet. Because that's what all these things need, right? All these things that come to the platform that are coming down the line, they need people's perspectives or a fresh look at something to be like, hey, why can't I do this with it? Or like, could I do that with it? And that's what kind of makes these APIs grow. Like, that's kind of like why when people would be like, why on earth did you make that? You're never going to use that in production. But actually, like, I made this and it uncovered some bug in some API spec. And now, because I made some silly demo, like that API, when it lands, might be more useful for you. It's kind of interesting, like when you think about it like that. There was one I did, well, there was a couple I did last year where it was like, one I did with the CSS anchoring spec, which was like, I was doing something where I updated the anchor position dynamically. And when it was initially implemented in Chromium, you could do transitions between the anchor positions. So like if you updated it, it would animate to the next one. Like it'd be animating like an inset properly or something. Something changed in the implementation as it evolved and the transition stopped working. So I raised this bug and I said, look, I made this demo where a bear paw moves between input fields, but it doesn't work anymore. But what it did was it triggered like an implementation like rewrite or a refactor to support transitions. So it's like now when someone goes, when that spec does land eventually at some point, or, you know, it'll probably change a bit between now and then, but hopefully it will retain that behavior because of that funky little issue I raised ages ago. And it will be like, oh, sweet. Like I can transition this. And it's like those little things. So like the more people try out stuff for their own use case, like the more everyone benefits in the long run, because people have tried it or like seen a different way or just seen it through different eyes, because it's really hard to try and think of like all the possible use cases. You know, I always think of like when I used to contract, some of the most fascinating people would be like the testing engineers or like the QA people, because they could spot an edge case from a mile away that you'd never
think of. That's what I was going to say. You suss out some edge cases by like pushing the boundaries and experimenting with these things. And they give you an API and you're like, great, let me try something weird and cool with it. Not just I built a form, you know.
Exactly, right? So like, that's like, it kind of echoes back to the initial idea of like how I would learn things or how I have learned things along the way, which was like my line was always, or is on my slide deck would be, go beyond the documentation, become it kind of thing. Like just follow your ideas. Because you just don't know what you learn from it. So you just supercharge yourself and you just become the docs, because there are no docs for what you want.
Yeah, there you go. And that's true.
It just raises things and you can, yeah, you can help shape stuff, especially if you end up working close to these kind of things. But some of them you don't need to. Like there's open UI. That's an open group. People can go and join that and get involved with like these platform things that are like coming down the line. Some of them are really cool. But it's just interesting. It's interesting to see that side of things. Like I hadn't seen it until I did that work. So it was like, it's kind of cool to see. But to think like, oh, actually, the more people get involved with it, the easier it becomes for the spec writers and things, because they see more things. And it's easier to get it in early doors and get it like as cover as many things as they can, as opposed to like later down the line, oh, we didn't kind of cater to that. The API doesn't quite fit for that.
You like need fresh eyes, essentially, right? Like you're like trying to lead something with some bias, essentially. Like it just ends up, it's not intended, but you know, it just ends up being like a natural artifact of doing new things and documenting what you think are certain assumptions. And then you have someone come in and do some crazy shit with that. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah, it was pretty much, well, it still is pretty much what I try to do. I'm always like, yeah, I wonder if I could shoehorn that in to do what I want, or like, do this. And you learn a lot doing that. And it's not just like CSS, it's like even like JavaScript or like, you know, Canvas, React, FreeJS, GreenStock, whatever you want to use. It's like always makes you think, ah, could I do that, or would that work, would it do what I want there? And like a lot of the time you find a way. One of the weird demos, obviously at the time of this will be ages ago now, but was like a little Apple tear strip thing, right? And it was like someone posted a video of this like tear strip concept, like the Apple box kind of thing. And I was like, oh, how would you do that? Like you would grab it and then you would want to maybe use like a clip path, and then that would hide part of the backing. And then as you pull it, like you're dragging it, but then I want like drag resistance. So when I first tug it, it needs to not move as much. And then as I go past, then it eases off, and then I get to the end, and then, well, now I need to be able to move it around because I've gone past the end. And then when I drop it, it should just go away. And like all these little ideas and things come up, and then they're all little things that you tackle along the way, but each one picks up a new skill or something new that you found or some, and then it just, like as you said earlier, it snowballs. And then like they're new things that you take into the next thing, and your knowledge just picks up, and you're like, oh, I just use that trick from that one and that trick from that. And then you just become like to the point where you're like, I can just build whatever I want. That's cool. And that's what I used to do when I freelance. I'd just be like, you can dream it, I can do it, you know? It's just Pixar. Right. And that's what I would say to people.
I was trying to look for a second because I wanted to try to quote him, but I feel like, so Ken Wheeler said something about one of your postings recently. Like, it was something like, I just learned more about CSS by seeing this than I have in like my last 10 years of dev. Something like that. You know, I'm paraphrasing or a little buzzed and forgetting half of it. But I think that's exactly it, right? Like, you can learn so much by going off script and just let me recreate this thing and see where that gets me. Or, oh, there's a new feature. What weird shit can I do with that? But they're not telling me.
Yeah, and even exploring some of the, like, just specs and, like, random things. That there's so much out there. It's funny. I was watching a colleague's podcast interview, and he mentioned an app that I went and checked out. And the first thing I noticed was they had a number counter of, like, dollars on the homepage, and it was shifting all over the place. And I was like, man, they just need to throw some font variant numeric on there or whatever. I don't even think is that even the right property? It'd be all right if I was in the IDE. Something like,
I'm a lot dumber than you, so I don't know.
I'm just
nodding my head, yes.
Oh, there's font feature settings tnum, and then there's font variant tabular nums or numeric. Font variant numeric tabular nums. I don't know. It'd be fine if I'm in the editor, I'd just do it. But yeah, so I put it into DevTools, reloaded it, and I was like, oh, that fixed it. So then I was like, no, I'll just post that. I'll just post that as a funny one, like, hey, just a reminder, if you're going to animate numbers, like, because for some reason, like, I've found, and I don't know, like, if it's just I spend so much time in front of animations, or I've become, like, more sensitive to some of these things recently, like, more color-like things, or, like, more animations, I'm a bit like, ooh, that's caught me off a bit, or, like, I'm like, let's dull this down a bit. And I just notice things like that more, but especially with the numbers thing, I was just like, just post it out there. And that's quite an old property, but there's so many cool things you can do with that property, right? So if you had like a fraction, you can get in CSS, you can just get like a 3/4 or something. There's just a CSS property that will render it and lay it out for you, all those kind of things. So this is kind of sweet. Like, you can do all those kind of things, but they're like little properties that people might not be as aware of because they're not commonly used, but they are pretty clutch when you need them.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know. It's hard to know the fix for that if you had no idea that existed. So, yeah.
Yeah, you might be thinking, like, especially, I think when I posted that, people were like, oh, I'd try and, like, lay this out in a grid. And you could do it with, like, a grid if you padded it out, or, you know, you look for different, or people would just be like, oh, I just use a monospace font. Well, that's fine. But what if your designer says, no, it needs to be in this font? That's out of your hands. You can't turn around and go, well, the only way I'm going to animate this is if it's JetBrains mono.
Right, yeah. And they're so, like, what the fuck is that? Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, we are over time here now. So is there anything you want to plug or mention before we end?
I don't really have anything to plug. I just...
Bears and bears. Red snapbacks? Or
yeah, really. Get your hats now, app. No, I don't sell any hats. So
you work for that place, Burkle or
you
whatever.
Sell hats with the with the red and then a bear on the other side.
I do have ones with bears on.
Oh, do you?
I haven't found anywhere to, like. I just have a wall of hats behind me. So
right. I don't know. All I see is Manchester United colors. So I guess that's who you support, or
well, I'm an
Arsenal
supporter,
otherwise.
So I'm offended. We're Arsenal in this house.
Rescind all my invites. No, I'm just kidding. It's not that serious.
It's
not 2005 anymore. I'm not too worried, even though you're doing a lot better.
No, that's debatable. It's still yet to win anything, you know. So.
That's fair.
But no, I don't think there's anything to plug. I guess it's more of a watch this space kind of thing. Come find me on the interwebs and follow along for the journey. Because there are some things we want to build. Like, we want to build a new CSS related blog site. That is something we're working on.
CSS tricks. What?
Oh. And that's,
you could probably buy it for pretty cheap now.
I don't know, the traffic's probably pretty good. I don't know what Chris got, but
yeah,
he's doing all right.
People have suggested that I build something like that, and I've also this week had suggestions of doing a book or something, which is something I've always thought, like, like an anthology of walking through different types of demo and the tips and tricks you can pick up along the way. So that's something maybe I'm thinking about. And then hopefully we'll be doing a front-end master's course like next year. So that'll be quite cool as well.
So follow Jay and see what comes. See what comes. I say.
It's all, you know, who knows? I didn't realize, I didn't think I'd be sitting here last year. You know,
so. Cool. Thanks everyone for listening. If you liked it, please subscribe, leave us ratings and reviews. We appreciate it, and we will catch you next time.